this goes in, the cup will be staying here in Egypt. Up he steps, Abu Dricker, number 22, and he scored! And Egypt have won the African Cup of Nations for a record fifth time.
Cairo 2006. The hosts, Egypt, clinch the Cup of Nation again, and the home crowd love it.
You can imagine, it's their cup, they've done it.
Football is a passion right across Africa, says David Goldblatt, author of The Ball is Round, A Global History of Football.
Wherever you go in Africa, you will see people play football. It is rooted in a participative culture on every spare bit of land, in the slums of the booming megacities, but also in, you know, the rural areas. Football is played, a rag ball, a ball made of old plastic bags scavenged from the city's dumps will suffice. Add to that, you have a football culture beyond just playing, but of participating, of watching, of following, that is deeply rooted in the rhythms of everyday life. African football stadiums ring to their own distinctive rhythm, in particularly drums and horns, in a way that, you know, no other football culture manages.
Most of the football is played at amateur level. Leagues are well organised and financed in North Africa, but elsewhere in the continent, professionalism is not widespread, says the international football consultant Emmanuel Maridas.
South of Sahara, there may be maybe five or six countries who are trying to make sure that at least people who are playing football on a club level go back home with something in hands. That could be countries like Nigeria, Ivory Coast, Ghana, South Africa, and probably Kenya, who, despite all the problems, are setting up a professional league. But the international community, FIFA in general, people are saying that come 2010, they want all African countries to become a professional. They ask the African FAs at least to embark on a professionalism because they want to leave something, a sort of legacy to the youth.
Club players in Africa often lack basic medical attention or physiotherapy and dietary support. In some cases, even hot water at training grounds is unavailable. David Goldblatt agrees that the professional game in Africa has often struggled.
There is, of course, a desperate lack of facilities, of equipment, of steady payment for coaches and players in many leagues, which is the, you know, the sine qua non of effective professional football. And in some countries, for example, Senegal, where you know once had a reasonably organised professional game, the outflow of the best talent to the leagues of Europe has seen a really precipitous decline in the popularity and quality of professional football to the point where, you know, the professional league is barely watched.
All but two of the Senegal squad for this year's Cup of Nations play their club football in Europe. Most teams are in a similar position. And although this may enhance individual performance, Emmanuel Maridas believes it doesn't help build a national squad.
We need at least a local team with, let's say, a crop of four, five or six professionals who come as, you know, backup to help put up the good show. And then maybe we'll say there is a progress. But when you bring 11 players from Europe playing in a good leagues, you take them back home in Africa to play, is exactly like you take Europeans to go and play in Africa, because those boys, they live here in Europe. Psychologically, environment-wise, diet, everything, day-to-day life is quite different than our attitude in Africa.
The same goes for coaches. Only four of the 16 teams in this year's Cup of Nations have their own nationals in charge. Angola is one. Their coach is a former youth international. The team has done well in recent years. It's appearing at the Cup of Nations for the second time in a row, and it qualified for the last World Cup. The fruits of an end to decades of civil war 5 years ago, says Defende Rue Marquez.
After the war, everything is as improved in the country, in football as well. So we can see some good players, people that were... I remember they were playing when I was a young boy. Some of these people, now they are coaching teams in Angola. So this, I believe, will bring a better quality to the football in Angola. And for the future, I believe that we can improve a lot.
So better football is played when there's political stability, and sporting success can lift a nation. When South Africa won with its multiracial team in 1996, the victory seemed to symbolise the post-apartheid spirit of reconciliation. David Goldblatt says the game has had close political associations in Africa throughout the past century.
Football came to acquire an intimate connection institutionally and culturally with the assertion of African independence. And in the post-colonial period, African football teams, particularly national football teams, become one of the main, sometimes the only, institution that is genuinely national in some sense, in countries where the notion of the nation state and the nation is actually pretty thin, often some kind of colonial relic of lines drawn on the map. Football and football teams provide an absolutely central form of unity.
FIFA, the governing body of world football, is pumping $70 million into African football in the run-up to the 2010 World Cup, being held in an African country, South Africa, for the first time. It aims to give every national association an all-weather pitch, improve management and administration, and build sponsorship deals. The General Secretary of the Sudanese Football Association, Abdul Mugwid al-Din, says commercial money is vital.
Nowadays in Sudan, the economy is growing. We discovered the oil in our land, and politically there is stability. We have many companies, telecommunications companies, and they are very interested in football, and they provide some money for the federation and for the clubs.
Sudan's clubs have done well in African club competitions this year, and every team member of its national squad plays club football at home, the only side in Ghana for which this is true. But it's an outside prospect of lifting the Cup of Nations. Emmanuel Maradas says there are four or five teams with the pedigree to win.
Côte d'Ivoire, they have a sound administration, good leadership, they are doing well. They may be the team to beat in Ghana. And then you have the North Africans. Egypt, for example, they can go down there with the M to retain their title. And then the third one, the Tunisians, they're there because simply their leagues are well organized. And the South Africans, they may cause a problem as well.
David Goldblatt believes the teams to watch are the hosts Ghana themselves, title holder Egypt, Nigeria and Cameroon. Could any of those go on to win the World Cup in 2010, though? Mr. Goldblatt says they'd do well to learn from Brazil, who for years showed abundant talent, but didn't win until they matched it with solid administration, organisation and coaching.
A degree of personal and institutional discipline and focus was created around that team that allowed the team to go and play their very best and win the World Cup with some style in 1958. And I think it's that marrying of the raw talent, the passion and the size of the talent pool with a level of organisation that focuses squarely on the winning of football games rather than issues of politics, status, money and power, which often bedevil African Football Association. And when that happens, I think we will see an African team win the World Cup.